BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. Later, inclusive fun for all the family. Could live audio description be the shape of things to come for the many visually impaired football fans out there? We'll explain more later. But first, some call football the beautiful game, but here's a rather different take on beauty. Berenice Magistretti is, amongst many things, a journalist by training, specialising in fashion and accessible technology. But it was really only when her eye condition of retinitis pigmentosa began to affect her more seriously that it dawned on her that visually impaired people, indeed disabled people generally, were often excluded or ignored when it came to fashion, beauty, access to wider culture. Well, in Berenice's case, it all started with white canes. So, Berenice, just explain your relationship with the white cane, because it began by being a rather rocky one, I think.
Yes. First of all, I think it took me about 2 years to mentally and emotionally prep, you know, at the idea of starting to even use a cane. Because the narrative around, you know, vision impairment, you know, disability in a more general sense and accessibility aids, you know, it's still so stigmatized. When it came to actually buying my first cane and I was browsing, you know, like online shops, I thought, well, there's no cane that I personally find, you know, stylish or fashionable, because I'm someone who's always loved fashion, beauty, art, design, photography. And I thought, you know, I want something that's stylish and that can be an accessory more than just a functional medical aid. So that's when I realized there's definitely a gap in the market in terms of how stylish an accessibility aid can be.
So you designed your own, basically.
I did. So like any true entrepreneur, like it didn't exist. So I decided to make my own, and I worked with Italian artisans and designers because I'm half Italian and based in Milan. So it's made of beautiful wood and leather and sort of, you know, gold, obviously not real gold, but, you know, tinted gold. And I absolutely love it. And I'm hoping to make a, you know, a small collection out of it soon.
And because you were fascinated and knowledgeable about fashion and design, you decided to do something about this more generally. Tell us about your platform, Visible Voices.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I just mentioned, I think I couldn't recognize myself in the narrative that was being told, you know, around disabilities, that it's basically people who are, you know, often depressed, victims, patients who don't really care about how they look. This is not how I identify as someone with a disability. And so I thought it's really time to create a new narrative. And basically, Visible Voices is a platform that is shifting the perspective on disabilities through the lenses of fashion, beauty, art, and design. There's a very cool e-shop that sells, you know, things that are both functional but also fashionable. Our products range from adaptive clothing to walking sticks to beauty products, and it can be anywhere from, you know, 10 to 70-80 pounds. So I think it's rather accessible price points for now, and then we'll see if we have maybe more exclusive products. But the reality is that the luxury space just does not cater to people with disabilities, and it's also something that we'd like to change.
So what kinds of things are on your website? Give me a few more examples, and how have you adapted it so it'll be easy to use, because of course many websites are just plain inaccessible.
Absolutely. And so this is something we worked very, very hard on, because we didn't want to compromise on either accessibility nor the aesthetics. So basically, our website is very, very well contrasted. It's sort of a black and white palette, and the images sort of bring in the colors. We've worked with sound engineers to develop a sound logo, because if you think about it, we always talk about the visual logos, but, you know, what about people who are, you know, blind or have low vision and can't necessarily recognize a brand by the visual logo? So we worked on a sonic identity so that, you know, hopefully people can start recognizing us also through sound.
Sounds like the start of a Paul McCartney song, doesn't it, really?
That's
a compliment. I'm a huge fan.
Okay, amazing. Well, thank you. And we also have an audio feature for every article that we have, so that you can just hit play and listen to the article being read by voices that are very natural, non-robotic. So I think we just want to showcase that it's not because a website is fully accessible that it's necessarily, it looks clunky and purely functional. It can also be beautiful.
Let me bring in Hazal Babasin, who has been featured on Visible Voices. And Hazal, some time ago, you had very similar ideas, I think. You started your own company, Blind Beauty. Tell us a bit about that and what you're doing now.
Very similar to Berenice. It came from, you know, a pain that I was feeling and experiencing and something that was lacking in the world. There was never an intention for it to become a business. It was just for myself and the rest of the visually impaired blind community who, yes, we can't see, but we still want to feel beautiful and use beauty products, skincare products.
Give us some more idea of the kind of products you had, because I guess they would be the products that other people were making. So what was it about yours that were going to be distinctive?
It was exactly the same products. So, for example, our face moisturiser with SPF, it's already out there and it's nothing new, but it is just about the accessibility of not only the brand and the product, but also the packaging as well. And it is through the sensorial side of things, so the smell of the product, the feel of the product, and also the packaging. So what was really important to me was to have Braille on the packaging, but I appreciate that not everybody can read Braille, so we added a QR code as well to make things easier for people to be able to just scan across and have it read out to you.
What was the attitude that you came across? Because you were going to them saying, I've got this, and it's a bit like what you've got, but I want it packaged differently.
Oh my God. I wasn't expecting this to be the hardest part of the journey when starting the brand. But when I was contacting companies and saying, you know, this is the business, this is the brand, this is the product, this is what I need you to design, I was being asked, why? You're not a medicinal product. No, what do you mean? I was so shocked. What do you mean, why? You know, they're not telling me whether they can or can't do it. They're wondering why it's even a requirement or a necessity, or why I'm even bothering. Mm. And it took such a long time to find manufacturers that, one, could do what I wanted them to do, but also understood and didn't question it and believed. I did actually turn down a few manufacturers because I didn't feel like they believed in what I was doing and that it was important.
I suppose it's quite a difficult thing to get your head around, though, if you're not a blind or partially sighted people. You know, don't you just want the same products as everyone else? Is it all just about packaging?
100% I can understand that, because until I lost my sight, I didn't realise that this was even an issue. I didn't understand the difficulties that, you know, being blind or visually impaired would bring with it. And it's not just about the product. I think it's the whole process. Even going into any kind of beauty store is so intimidating as a sighted person. Now even harder with my impairment. And then you do go ahead and buy the product maybe online, or you take a whim when you're in store. You can't distinguish between one packaging to the other.
Let's hear a consumer voice, because we're also joined by someone who would, I think, be a natural keen customer for these kind of platforms and products. Jessica Anaba is studying for not one but two PhDs. She's planning to build a blind school in the Congo, but has also been featured in British Vogue. Jessica, welcome back. Tell us what you look for when you're buying beauty products for yourself.
It's important for me to be able to identify each of my products and to be able to use them correctly. One thing that I've noticed on pretty much all of my beauty packaging, be it skincare, makeup, they all contain their names and instructions of use on the packaging, on the label, but all of that is not accessible to me. So I'm paying the same amount as everyone else to have the product, but I'm not able to access the product as everyone else is able to. I'd say the best way to describe it is, say, for example, for sighted people who buy perfume online, the company will try their hardest to describe the smell by describing the top notes, the middle notes, and the base notes so that someone can have an idea of how it smells. And that same level of energy and detail and preciseness needs to be put into visual things for people who can't see. A visually impaired customer or consumer needs to be able to go onto a website or walk into a store and come out knowing what they have purchased and knowing how to use what they have purchased.
And Jessica, you have such a busy life. I gave a little inkling of that. Some people might wonder, you know, why you care so much about looking beautiful. Yeah, I'm sure you look beautiful naturally. Having, you know, having the right makeup, hair care, etc. What does it mean to you to take the trouble that you clearly do?
So Obviously, looking beautiful seems to be a visual concept, but it's also a feeling. And I think that that is overlooked by a lot of people who focus on the visual aspects of beauty. So feeling beautiful is a huge thing. I'll say it's just as important, if not more important. And I think that everyone has the right to feel clean, to feel presentable.
If I could just interject for a second, because that's also what we're trying to showcase with Visible Voices. And to Jessica's point is, you know, like feeling beautiful, but also like you can hear beauty through a beautiful sound or melody. You can smell beauty through an incredible scent. You can touch beauty because, you know, so I think like it's really like discovering beauty beyond sight and tapping into the other senses. You can combine functionality with beauty and style. Like it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. And I think that this is something hopefully luxury brands will begin to understand soon. And then if they set kind of that standard of inclusion, it'll trickle down to, you know, all of the other stores on sort of the more main street commercial shops.
And presumably perhaps the idea that there should be more people like you and Hazal who are actually bringing your own direct experience to the process.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And encourage other people to be more vocal about who they are and more visible as they are. And so that we don't feel like we need to hide, be invisible or ashamed because we're disabled.
Well, I think you've all made the point very strongly. Berenice Megistretti, Hazal Babesin, Jessica and Alba, thank you all very much indeed. And our next item is also, I suppose, about doing the same things as others want to do. The fact is that women's football is one of the fastest growing spectator sports, stimulated by the great success of the England team winning the last Women's Euros and hoping to do the same again this time. But if you're visually impaired and watching the Lionesses on ITV, you can watch with all the family, served by live audio description. Well, live audio description isn't new, so what's the significance of this? I'm joined by David Padmore, ITV's Head of Accessibility. David, we've always understood that doing audio description live does present challenges. Just explain how what you're doing at the Euros came about.
Well, it kind of goes back a couple of years, really. So we've been trying to grow the volume of our audio description across all of our broadcast channels and the streaming service, ITVX. And actually, the thing that really sort of pushed us over the line was the King's coronation, you know, an event of kind of such national importance that we felt we really had to do something. So with that as a goal, we developed a solution which enabled us to deliver live audio description to the viewer in the same way that they would receive standard recorded audio description. So they would just have to have the audio description switched on their TV set. They would watch the main channel along with everybody else, but they would receive live audio description. The King's coronation was relatively straightforward in some ways because it was such a structured program with lots of gaps between the commentaries.
So whereas football, you don't know what's going to happen next, basically, or where.
Exactly. And then we began to think, well, what else can we do with this service? And actually, coincidentally, Guinness got in touch with us as they were the sponsors of the Six Nations rugby tournament. And they were looking at what they could do to make that tournament more accessible generally. They were doing a lot of work in stadium, for example. And we said, well, we've got this solution. Why don't we adapt it for use in sport? Now, with sport, obviously, you've got a bit of a different challenge. You don't know what's coming next. You can't really fit audio description in between what the commentator's saying. So we decided to take a different approach and one that has been used in stadiums actually already at Twickenham Manor Premier League football. And that is to use professional commentators who have been trained in audio description and the needs of blind and partially sighted viewers to completely replace the commentary and deliver an alternative commentary for the whole of the half, mixing in the stadium effects to give a kind of immersive experience.
So, David, who do you think the audience for this is? Because, after all, there's always the option for visually impaired people, blind people in particular, of radio. Some will listen to the TV commentary and feel they get enough information to follow the match if they want to be in the room with other people. But I'm curious to know who you really think you're reaching with this.
There are two elements which are a bit tricky. The first is making sure there is absolute synchronicity between the TV pictures and the audio that the people are listening to. And often when you send people off to a different service, say radio, it's very difficult then to have exactly the same experience as potentially other members of the family who are listening to the standard commentary, because it's so important that you get to celebrate the goal or understand that the goal has been scored at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
And I think also with TV commentary, we're kind of looking to do something slightly different from radio commentary. I mean, this is a question we have asked ourselves, but what we're really trying to do is to convey the TV pictures. Now, ITV clearly doesn't deliver radio services, so it's not very easy for us to suggest that people go off and listen to the BBC.
Or even talk sport, perhaps. You probably don't
Or even talk sport, exactly. So yeah. Essentially, trying to make sure that we are enabling people to watch it together as a shared experience, and also, you know, within the main programme that ITV is showing on the main channel.
Is this a one-off, or is it going to become a regular service when broadcasting sport?
Oh, I think it's something we're looking to make more regular. I mean, obviously, after this tournament, we'll talk again about what our plans are. And I think it's one of those great examples of public service broadcasting in the UK, where the BBC and Channel 4 have done their own developments in this area. And we're all kind of pushing each other to see, you know, how this service should develop. And I think it's kind of a unique thing within UK public service broadcasting that the main broadcasters really take this interest and try and, you know, make their services more accessible over time.
Yeah, and I know that BBC and ITV do kind of work together and share the games. So I'm guessing that you're praying that England beat Sweden, because I think the BBC have got that one. You get first pick of the semi-finals, is that right?
That's as I understand it. So, yeah, we're very much supporting the BBC and England in the quarterfinal. Make sure that the Lionesses get through, and we'll then provide this service on the semi-final.
David Padmore, thank you very much indeed. Finally, a lot of you are pressing us to investigate rumours about cuts to Access to Work. Now, that's the Department for Work and Pensions service set up to provide support to blind and partially sighted people and other disabled people, such as help with financing human support and getting appropriate specialist equipment. Now, the rumours are that cuts are planned, and listeners are making the point that this seems to be in stark contrast to the government's insistence that its policies are designed to get more disabled people into work. Well, we can assure you that we are pressing for an interview with the minister with responsibility for supporting this policy, Sir Stephen Timms. So far, we've received no reply from his office to our requests. And your direct experiences in applying for and using Access to Work would be very helpful. You can email those experiences to intouch@bbc.co.uk or leave voice messages on 0161 836 1338. From me, Peter White, producer Beth Hemmings, goodbye.